time for the second funniest podcast with your hosts, the Kevin Miller and Justin Wersch. Have fun, guys.
Well, thank you, Sam. Hello. Thanks, and Sam. Welcome to the second funniest podcast, episode 343. I am your host, Justin Wersch. With me, as always, is the one, the only, the early adopter, the TheKevinMiller.com. Jump and press the circle button, Kevin.
Control-Alt-Delete, Justin.
Right? Am I right?
Do you think Sam can do another intro? I think it's time to get a little revamp.
Really?
I think it's great. I'm just saying, I feel like we've heard this one. Here's what I'd love to hear. I love the part in that where he is his own echo from a different take.
Uh-huh.
Like he did it twice and then layered that. I think that is so funny. I want to hear the whole thing like that. Like a chorus of Sam's...
You don't think that would be too much of a good thing?
No. Here's the thing. Like to this kind of music, as if there were a chorus line of Sam's all saying whatever he wants to say and maybe do a little rhyme, a little music to it. I would pay no money for that.
I would like it if it also featured Beyonce. I don't know if that's possible, Sam.
Every pretty lady, every single lady, Dolby's in the good, Pirates got skippies.
That's kind of Kevin having his finger on the thumb of pulse of pop music. Every pretty lady, all the single ladies,
Pirates of Caribbean, all of the scurvy.
Oh, that's funny to me.
Chippewa Indians. Hey, let's do some emails.
All right. This is from our good friend who said he would never email us again.
Before you dive into that, what have you done in the last week?
Let's see. I went to a petting zoo and pumpkin patch with my
son.
That
was 2 weeks ago. What did you do since this episode?
That was it. I've been just reliving that moment. I've seen Green Lantern 47 times.
What's your worst favorite part?
My worst favorite part is Peter Sarsgaard. I think that's his name, is the bad guy with the big head. That's good part of the movie.
There are two parts of that movie where I think the whole thing just comes crumbling down on itself. One is where the nothing is like eating up the town, and they're somehow able to keep it at bay long enough to... I just think that this is just stretch. It's like Captain America, where like, why aren't you landing the plane? I don't understand why you're not landing the plane. And then the other part is where Sinestro is able to convince them to make the yellow ring, and their defense is... We must wager our actions based on millennia of decisions, and you've only had an existence for a few years. That line of logic would only work if they had the opposite desires. If Green Lantern was like, no, seriously, make the yellow ring because it will save the day, why won't you make this thing that can stop them? And them going, no, you don't understand, it's too much power. But for them to send, after multiple millennia of them deciding not to do that.
It's always a funny thing in science fiction or comic book lore for them to say, listen, we are smarter, which is why we're doing this incredibly stupid thing, which is only for the purpose of creating conflict in about 30 minutes.
And it's to heighten the human spirit. You don't understand, humans have a way of enduring that kind of trouble. You should just, if you just set your mind on it, anything's possible. It's a very American idea. that was good. Green Lantern.
What else did we do?
You can read an email.
Captain America arrived. Speaking of that, he did not land that plane. Spoiler alert.
With that? Did you watch How It Should Have Ended?
Kevin, he's a super soldier. Now, we just realized that the Guardians, millennia of intelligence, making the stupidest mistake possible, right? Super soldier, he's all brawn, no brain, evidently.
Yeah. You watch How It Should Have Ended?
Did I watch How It
Should... Have you ever seen the How It Should Have Ended? We're going to spend some time on that after this. It's all a brilliant web series that was made by one guy, and then I think it got picked up by Starz, and now they make these little
viral
videos.
Is it as good
as
Phillips' Movies in Reverse?
It's that kind of... it's proof that Movies in Reverse could work, because it's like how... it points out the logical flaws in movies, and then how it should have ended if people were actually intelligent.
Do they cut like minutes, like a movie's like 15 minutes?
It's like, they do the entire Harry Potter series in 7 minutes. And at the end of it, you're like, oh yeah, why isn't it like that? By the end of the movie, you're like, yeah, why didn't it end like that? It's pretty great.
How do they do it? Do they just cut?
It's cartoons. Oh, okay. It's animated like Flash. But to the whole thing with Captain America, they have this great thing where it's like, why? He lists off all the reasons. The bombs aren't on the plane. They're all written in English. They're not really bombs. They're more like little jet-propelled planes, and he got rid of most of them. He has full control of the giant bomber. It's not on a timer. It's not about to crash. There's no reason why he doesn't just put the plane down on the ground, and instead he's like, no, I have to drop it in the ice. It's the only way.
I have one answer.
Yep.
Is if he does not crash in that ice, he cannot be an Avenger in the modern
world. Exactly. That's the only reason.
Isn't that the only answer we need?
That seems like the most easiest thing to fix. Put a bomb in the room. Put a bomb on the room. Put a bomb in the room, and he's done. And then I believe it. There's a sealed door and a cockpit, and he's like, well, I got a choice. This thing was rigged to blow if this happened, and so now it's going to go down. So I bet.
Oh,
no.
You're saying that if they would have just put a little effort into just
another.
I talked about that a long time ago, but when I heard Jon Favreau interviewed about Iron Man 1,
yeah,
on Howard Stern, and Howard Stern's a big comic book nerd or whatever.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah. So he goes, Jon, I got one issue. He goes, I love the movie. He goes, mm-hmm. I think it's the best superhero movie made. He goes,
it's pretty great.
He goes, I just have one issue. He's like, if Tony Stark, and he's Tony Stark, he's brilliant. Yeah. He has all these hard, like, issues struggling to learn to fly the Iron Man suit.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it that Obadiah Stane could just get in it and be able to compete with Tony Stark? And there was this pause because there's a call-in. Jon Favreau's on the phone. He goes, you got me there. I don't know. I don't know.
I didn't find that unrealistic, though. I mean, the suit was bigger, so it seemed like it had a better chance of doing
easier,
that sort of thing.
Easier, because it's clunkier.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I
it's
got
more
that
might than finesse.
Yeah, I got that impression that it was just that they saw that in the design and they added it to it. He did have the same problem. He got up there and iced and fell to the ground. So,
well, I think you are right, and I also think Howard. Like, it is in the beginning. Like, I guess what Howard is saying is that I think John's answer is that, well, we just felt like nobody really wanted to see Obadiah Stane struggle.
With,
because that's all you really had to have is just at least a moment of him going, how does this work?
Yeah, you know? But they approached that by saying, this is really good. He said, I don't have much of a flair for this, but I really understand it. I like the suit. It seemed to be that the suit was working within it. You know, honestly, if that's the biggest nitpicky nerd thing can do
great.
The movie, you're doing okay.
Howard Stern said that.
Yeah, and I'm a pretty big nitpicker. So for logical story flaws, and if that's your biggest story flaw, it's like, no.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, that's up to interpretation.
This is from our good friend Elvis Reptilicus, sent from MePhone. This is the guy, like I said, who said we would never hear from him again.
Oh, you really?
Yeah, he said, let Kevin read in British accent. Do you mind reading this in a British accent?
Sure, yeah. I have a terrible British accent, but I'll try. We should get my wife in here. She has an amazing British accent. Where am I reading? You see that movie Thor? I love that movie. I hear it was directed by Kenneth Branagh, which made it all the more awesome. That was your guys' favorite scene. What was your guys' favorite scene? See, it becomes Australian.
Favorite funny scene.
Favorite funny scene. I'm not bothering you guys, am I? After I said you'll never hear from me again, sent from the phone. You're right. Yeah. How come you can do that? Yeah, I'm just terrible. Look, I'm terrible at two things, accents and cold reads, which makes me a terrible voice actor. Oh, and I can't sing. I don't know why I'm not booking.
I would take singing lessons and read in an air conditioner.
Honestly, yeah. The singing doesn't come up nearly as often as the British accent.
You have to sing in voiceover auditions?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They want Disney. A lot of people want singing characters.
Oh.
Yeah.
A whole new Thor. I did see Thor.
Kenneth Branagh was directed Thor?
Yeah, I think that's why it was. It seemed so dramatic a little bit. Like there was, and I think that's what you need. For them to be able to speak like Vikings, you need a guy who's like, I do Shakespeare as well.
Because that's what I thought. That's what I enjoyed about it. That I felt it was refreshing. That it was so many movies being about aliens, which I love, or time travel, or all that. To go to the fantasy genre, dump it into the modern world, and not have it be a train wreck. I thought it was a delicate line to walk, and I think they pulled it off pretty decently. And I think it's because, and this would be to Kenneth Branagh's credit, is because it was rooted in the characters. Like, you really get Thor. From the moment he's on the screen, you're like, oh, I don't know a Viking, but I know a guy like that.
Yeah.
And he's relatable and interesting, and he works within this universe.
Yeah, Adam Carolla had a lot of things to say that I remember listening to going, oh, that's a good point. But when I watched the movie, I think a lot of it was that I didn't really know, other than the fact that he was the god of thunder and
yeah.
had a hammer that gave him all his power and that nobody could lift or move
because yeah.
it was like made of the center of a star that had collapsed or something like that. It'd be really funny if I really, like, because I go, other than the entire
Yeah, that
origin,
was pretty specific because I didn't know that part about the hammer being made of the center of a star.
I'm pretty
collapsed.
Sure that's what it is. But anyway, like, I don't know. Other than, like, the origin,
yep.
I don't know anything about his villains or
right.
anything like that. And so I kind of went like, well, this is not made for me,
yep.
but I enjoy it for what it is. And but he hated the movie. I don't remember favorite quote unquote funny scene. I don't remember there ever being a.
I enjoyed. I think of it all the time where he's like, something weird's happening in town. You better call it in. Seriously? All right. Hey, Bass, we got Xena and he, like, yeah. Frodo. He lists all these sci-fis. And to me, that sold it to be like, yeah, this is ridiculous that these people are dressed like fantasy.
I do remember
like
that fantasy. Part, yeah. So I kind of laughed. I think I laughed out loud when he threw his cup on the ground after he finished it.
That was obvious to me.
Yeah.
I thought, well, if we're going to have Vikings, of course someone's going to yeah. break a plate and everybody's going to react weird.
And as far as you bothering us, yes. If you say something, stick to it.
And furthermore, this is my English accent. I work with a British guy, and it's just
I'm sorry.
Embarrassing for myself. Idea! This email is entitled Idea. I love it already.
Dear SFP, this is the last you will hear of me. This is the only reason why I read this one, is because it was followed by another email in response. Because here's what I'm saying. I don't really care. I love all of our listeners. And I just want you to know that it doesn't matter. If you don't have to announce that you'll we'll never hear from you. It's okay.
Because it's not true.
Yeah, and it's not
and
true.
And you're not bothering us.
Yeah.
Furthermore, I love everything about your email address, so you know who you are. The first part of it is pretty great, and I can't say it on the air because I don't want to give her your email address because I have to call out what happens after the at sign. You're still on AOL? Are you over the age of 50?
Dear SFP, this is the last you will hear from me for a while because I have to find a new email provider.
Oh. You had me again. Damn it.
It's because he used such a small font.
No. I just sort of zone out.
But I have two things to say. I'm not here just for Sly 4. I found this after your KFC sketch got to YouTube, and I will listen till, well, not till anything, two. I don't know what the two is for. Oh, no, this is the second question. Two. I want to hear your opinions on my comic strip. It's about 24 animals all living with each other in a mansion, but only four are the main protagonists. Jake, a wisecracking wolf dog, con man, Daisy, a cowardly German shepherd, and Chase, a brainy tabby cat, oh, and Paris, a karate black cat. Keep doing this. Bye.
I love it. I'll read that.
I just want to see what happens when people stop being nice and start getting real. That's all I want to know.
You know what? He brings up a good point. That's the second person we've gotten an email in the past couple episodes that said they found us through the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
We should either talk offline or generate more content that people can animate well to end up on the YouTube.
Well, I know that
maybe we should make a YouTube channel.
We can make a YouTube channel that people can upload to.
I see what you're saying. And people can add their own, like, SFP
It would be like
videos.
Facebook, but then they can add their own videos.
I mean, making these podcasts, unless we're going to do, like, a separate bonus track for the YouTube channel, I just don't imagine us spending a lot of time cutting together a movie.
Yeah.
And we're not those kind of guys.
Yeah, and I don't think we're very sketchy. We're conversational,
yeah.
And if things come up in the moment, then mm-hmm. we do it, and it's funny to us. But
if we got any animators out there, we'll come up with ideas all day long, because
yeah.
we could do this, and you could animate it.
Yeah.
It'd be fantastic, but I'm not animating anything.
Then I would be more willing to play peanut butter in your mouth. That's
even,
only funny to three people.
Even in context, that was awesome. It was an email that we've skipped.
Hey, me and my, that was funny to me. Hey, me and my friend Peter are having a debate. Who do you guys think is better, Spider-Man or Thor?
Spider-Man.
Incredible Hulk. That's our emails.
That's it. Oh, shoot. We should have dragged that out. What are we going to talk about?
What do you mean, what are we going to talk about? We always have... There's never an issue with us finding
stuff. I used to do that all the time of who is better, Spider-Man, or who would win in a fight, Spider-Man or Worf. I like to do those cross...
Worf. I like that one.
That was a good one. I drew a comic strip for a little while of what would happen if the Death Star fought the Borg. And I had this whole three storyline arc of in the first one, you know, they're meeting each other, the Borg just shows up because of some parallel universe thing, and they show up, and then they send out the TIE fighters, and then eventually the Borg come into the Death Star, and they assimilate like a Wookiee, and they assimilate this, and then eventually they try to assimilate Darth Vader after a pretty bitchin' fight, and then in episode...
Realize he's already Borg.
Exactly. Then they go into episode two, and in episode two, it's the Borg nanites versus the Metachlorians. This is my whole idea.
The whole movie takes place in a microscope?
Well, it was a comic strip, so like it's all... inside Darth Vader's body or is this
snaps.
Entire battle. I was like, actually, and then every time I worked on that, I'm like, that's a pretty sweet idea. I should probably not use that for this and work on it somewhere else. I'm going to have to go write the pitch for that.
Oh, now we have to edit that out.
A little while ago on the Second Funniest page, I've been doing these now because this episode's going to air a while from now. I've been putting up these commentaries or pictures that people can caption. Mm-hmm. So I grabbed this one off of Gears of War 3.
Mm-hmm.
I want to pull out some of my faves that people wrote on here because I didn't like any of these on the page because I didn't want to play favorites. But I think they're a little further down here. Someone had yours. Shit just got real, which is pretty funny. this one's great. For the last time, I will not swap friend codes with you. That was from James. Samuel's made me last. This pistol packs a paralyzing punch. Florian had one. I wanted to bring you flowers, but they were all sold out. So, and then HG Horse Girl made me laugh as well. Hey, check out my new camera. It's pretty great. Mine was going to be Iron Man's mask, Sepentor's body gear, and John Marston's pose. I got it all.
That's funny.
But I didn't contribute. So more of those.
I think my favorite is, look at my new camera.
Yeah, look at my new camera.
Because he's so aggressively pointing it. That's awesome. That's a great idea, Kevin. That's funny.
I stole it from some other site, but they're still fun to do.
This is some news coming to us. This is 2 weeks old, but I'm sure no doubt that we are breaking the story even then.
We live outside of time.
Unauthorized access hits Sony PlayStation accounts. Sony says it has detected a large number of unauthorized attempts to access user accounts on its PlayStation Network
still being
and
hacked.
Other online entertainment services. The Tokyo-based company says it has temporarily locked about 93,000 accounts whose IDs and passwords were successfully verified by the attempts. Sony has sent email notifications and password reset procedures to those customers. Sony says credit card numbers linked to the compromised accounts are not at risk, and it has taken steps to mitigate the activity.
Oh, don't mitigate.
Oh, that's
so
hurtful.
Gross. It's just wrong.
The incidents follow an embarrassing data breach earlier this year, which compromised personal data for more than 100 million online gaming and entertainment accounts. Oh, I didn't know that happened. Earlier this year, huh? Sony PSN got hacked. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was down for a month.
I would have heard about that.
You get your free? You know, I didn't do the... You remember you can get two games and the PlayStation Plus. Did you ever activate the PlayStation Plus?
No.
I didn't either, and it went away. And I was... Because I thought, well, I'm not going to do it now because everybody's got it right now. They're not going to put great
stuff. But
who
wants the PlayStation Plus? Like, why?
Well, everybody... It was free. Like, why didn't you? And I waited too long, and then it evaporated and went away.
Well, I didn't do it because there was some kind of thing where it was free for a while. And then they were going to, because isn't it a subscription thing?
It is. I thought they were just going to do it.
That's why I didn't do it.
You thought it would roll over, but you'd pay.
I thought it would immediately start doing it. And yeah. I was like, I was already committed to $15 a month for, what's it called again, with the superheroes and the.
Yeah, how's your love for that going?
I haven't touched it. I'm so sorry. I'm yawning. I haven't touched it because I've been so busy with my children's.
What is that ad on your screen over there for South America and the creature from the Neverending Story?
How dare you call it? That is Brontosaurus Jesus. He is there helping South America. And
Do you remember the movie Baby?
Yes.
Do you really?
With the baby dinosaur, right?
Yeah. It looks just like that.
Like it was It was like a stupid version of the animatronic dinosaurs from Jurassic Park.
But it predated them by 10 years. I remember loving that movie as a kid and being terrified of ever going to South America because of the mosquitoes. The idea of having to live in a net like those people did, I was like, why would you do that to yourself? I don't care if there are dinosaurs there.
This is another article from Bahia News. It says 91% of kids play video games, says study. Adults may make up the majority of game players. Oh, that's interesting.
Says what study?
Yeah, but video games are more popular than ever among kids. New research shows, according to NPD, whoever they are, 91% of U.S. children ages 2 to 17 play video games, 64 million. More interesting, these numbers are up nearly 13% from a 2009 study. The number of kids in the U.S. has increased by 1.54% in that time, but not nearly enough to make up for the massive increase in game playing. Gaming among kids ages 2 to 5 has increased the most. Year-to-date, through August 2011, kids comprised 44% of new physical software dollar sales, representing a vitally important consumer segment for the games industry, said Anita Frazier, industry analyst for the NPD Group. Knowing how kids are spending their gaming time and dollars in both traditional and non-traditional outlets is key to staying relevant to this highly engaged audience. So that's interesting that most video gamers are now in the real young kids.
Yeah.
Like really, really young. 2 to 5, that's young.
I'm a little surprised by that. And that, I'd love to know where they got their statistics on that.
NDP.
This came from Game of Sutra, and they did some interviews with people back at the GDC about World of Warcraft. They had a panel of them, and maybe you've read some of this stuff. But I found it fascinating because we've been having a lot of conversations about story arcs within games and how, I mentioned a few weeks ago, that games, I feel, are the future of media and storytelling in general, and that the word games is misleading, like in that article that you just read, it's encompasses everything.
Do you think it's fair? Like, I still don't think it's fair to call something like Angry Birds a video game.
Yeah, see, and that's the problem. That's like bite-sized entertainment you carry around on your phone, and board games. Sam actually on the Facebook a while ago, I said something about, you know, what game are you playing, and he said, well, it should also include board games and tabletop games and that sort of thing, and I don't think they do. In fact, my brother would tell you if you don't play tabletop game like Dungeon Dragon Warhammer kind of games, you're not a real gamer because those are real games. And I almost would agree with him because that's a game. Scrabble is a game.
He's saying you should be defined as a video game.
Yeah, that's not a thing. I'm not a video gamer. Nobody calls you that. But I would be interested to see.
The Wizard was.
That's because the medium was new. But I'd be interested to see that as time goes by, maybe in like when the current generation that's playing games starts to grow up and actually develops games, if we'll see a split between the two genres of games like QWOP, Angry Birds, Scrabble, the games, all the racing games, all the fighting games that have no story to them go over here, all the sports games go to one side, games, and then story-based games become this other thing. And that's what I think will eventually happen.
Yeah, because I don't think the action category is a good representation of the category.
And that's why I'd be interested when they say...
An adventure, action or adventure. Like, how are those different?
And it's because it all goes back to, you know, in the 80s when they didn't have room for a story.
And why is a first-person shooter not an action game? It has more action than most action.
The names are all, like, platformer, third-person, first-person. You know,
well, platformer, to me, I think makes sense because it's an idea of...
It comes from platformer, from 2D side-scroller.
Yeah.
And now you can have a 3D platformer. All it's mean is that they take a game in the same genre of the original platformer
generation of a Mario Brothers
is now
game.
In a 3D world, but it's no longer a platformer because there are no platforms. It's all an open terrain. So we're evolving this language that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, I didn't play the more recent ones, but like because I would like that. I keep thinking of Sly. Sly is a platformer, and I get it. Like. Because even within the levels, it's all built around these platforms and variations of levels. Whereas, like to me, like a game like a Tomb Raider or Uncharted, the gameplay, I mean, yes, are there platforms that you're jumping around, but that's not what you're really doing. There are puzzles to figure out, and there's a shooting element.
And that's what I'll be interested to see is like this dissection of the two things. What is the driving force behind the game? Is it to win, or is it to tell a story? Like, why are we playing this?
The accomplishment of winning.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like, I play Scrabble. I have a number. I play Carcassonne with you. We play all these different games, but there's no story. I don't need a story. No. Like, a game like Tetris, when they try to, like, it's story Tetris, and now we have a narrative. Like, I don't care. I just want to drop the blocks into the thing. That's a game. That's a puzzle that it itches that side of my brain. On the other side, I play a game like Uncharted. I play a game like Arkham Asylum or Arkham City or Arkham... H.P. Lovecraft. You know, that's where it comes from, Arkham.
H.P. Lovecraft?
Yeah, it's all his stuff.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, famous writer, a lot of real deep, big cult following. H.P. Lovecraft, you should look him up.
All right.
I think it's H.P.
Wait, you don't mean right now.
You can, he's fascinating. Jack Rita loved him. But so I got into all that to say that the folks over at WoW were on this panel, and they were talking about storylines, which made me laugh because... as far as I could tell, WoW had a very limited story. So they have writers. I'm doing that in air quotes. But I think I'm being unfair because clearly Blizzard does a really good job of telling stories in their games. But for a game like an RPG or an MMORPG, it just seems weird that they would spend that much time and energy to be able to articulate their story.
Are the stories in the MMORPGs... always world-based and not necessarily built around your character?
Yes, and that's an issue in that really you're just sort of surfing along the story, but somehow you are in the center of it all and affecting everything. But the truth is, without you, the story, all you've done is unlock the next scene.
Yeah.
And that's why Guild Wars 2 has that whole manifesto about what you do matters, it affects the world, things don't just respawn and recreate. You're not just unlocking another chapter in a story. What you do actually affects the world in general. So these writers, they said, oh, excuse me, I kept trying to find my spot on this iPad. okay, they went on to talk about a lot about how some of them don't feel like the forums matter to them. Like, they're like, I read it, but I don't really care what the fans say. And some of them say, no, I really do get impacted by the fans. But one of them goes on to say...
these are all guys from Blizzard.
These are all Blizzard writers.
Yeah.
To Wa, that's one of the authors, the characters in the Blizzard games are real in a sense. As long as the writers and designers are true to who the character is, then everything works out how it should. And if something really isn't working, Blizzard designers and writers should be able to sniff it out during the creation process, he said. I keep thinking of Rock Band, said Chris Mitzen, Blizzard SVP of Creative Development. You jam on a piece and people either dig it or they don't. The bottom line is, you got to stay true to the artist you are, he said. He argued that creating a memorable story and characters isn't about being super clever or even unique. It's more about a writer tapping into something that resonates from within and writing from the heart. These goofy contrivances that a writer writes is something true coming out of him, said Mitzen. The more of yourself you put into this stuff, the more it feels like art again. Which is fascinating to me. Sometimes the writer's heart says to kill off an important character, but this decision should not be taken lightly and should be used as a powerful storytelling tool, the panelist said. When you do something like that, you have to be offering the player something new as well, Martin says. For example, when designers decided to kill off a character in a sci-fi game, his death might then open up brand new dimensions to explore. You play fair with fans... When you do it that way, you play fair with fans when you do it that way, said Martins. Never waste a character's death. Panelists also recounted some key gaming moments that made them realize the power of the medium, and this is why I brought this up. Cameron Dayton, transmedia consultant for Blizzard, said for them, it happened while playing ID Software's Doom. A wall opened up behind me in the game, and it was a demon, and I literally fell out of my chair. My friends would snowboard and have all these cool bruises. I had a gaming bruise, he laughed. But he was proud of his geeky injury, and the fact that a video game initiated his primal flight instincts showed the effect games can have on players. For Wa, it was the RPG Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic from BioWare. The twist at the end of the game was his aha moment. It was one of those moments in which you realize you can tell a story in a gaming space. I was blown away. This is a new frontier of storytelling. It makes me think, you're just now realizing that?
Yeah.
Did you write games?
Well, I felt like, while you're reading that, I'm like, okay. And I'm like, because it feels like a lot of talk over nonsense to me in that, or stating the obvious.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Like that they're, it's like, how did you become the biggest
And I think his part about, I should have started a little later, but I think their part about killing off a character, I can get that. When you're writing a story, you're like, oh, it would make sense for this character to die. But you realize it's a little like an engine. If you do that, you lose this part of the machine. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to fill into that space? Like now you've lost this element.
And
so,
if you immediately replace it, then it's like, well, then why do we kill it?
Exactly. Why was it there? But there could be... I think what he's articulating, maybe they did in the panel, is it's the difference between writing a film and writing a television series. Mm-hmm. Because in a film, you can, you know, at the end of
Batman, short time frame,
the first Batman in 1989, the Joker is dead and never comes back. You can't do that in the comic books. You can't do that in a TV show because the Joker is your moneymaker. Yeah. You have just an infinite amount of stories to pump out of him. You kill him in the pilot. Why even make a Batman TV show? And I think that's what he's trying to articulate.
It's an interesting that they can't afford to do that in movies, like, because I was thinking about that. I thought about that a lot, that it's like, well, why would you put the Joker in the first Batman movie if you're going to make seven?
I don't think they had planned to make seven, although by that, because
but why is it that you can't plan to make three? You know what I mean?
Which is a good point.
Is it that, like, the first Spider-Man has to be against the Green Goblin? No, that's his nemesis, jerk-offs.
Well, Venom is Spider-Man's nemesis.
Well, became, but I mean, like, in the overall, in my opinion, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's because I watched the cartoons as a kid, not the comic books. But to me, like, the overall lore of Spider-Man, like, the Green Goblin is, like, it's him. Like, that's
probably
the guy.
True. But
now, the new one is, you're right, it's Venom.
Venom is
and
the more
Carnage.
Popular villain.
Yeah, and so, to me, I feel, well, and then I guess that means that they built it right, but I just feel, and Doc Ock, so it's like...
Doc Ock, huge.
You know what I mean? Like, so if I know I'm going to do three Spider-Man movies, you know what I mean?
Well...
To me, I would start with Shocker, and if you have to do this stupid idea of doing two villains, then I would throw Sandman in that one.
Yeah. Shocker's there. But I think the issue is the finances behind it, because to get a three-picture deal, as they say, is a big deal. Like, to walk in cold and say, we can build a franchise off of this material. Remember, in 1989, if you're taking Batman, the only film or the only televised version of Batman was only the 60s Batman at that time. And Superman had just had a huge explosion and then dive-bombed horribly by Superman 4. It was an embarrassment to the franchise. So people are a little...
But to me, well, they had more. They could have done... But to me, again, I feel like it's like, well, now he's taking on General Zod. And then in the second movie, he beats him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, now what do we do? Well, we call Richard Pryor.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that's
get
the
him
fourth
in
one.
And make it funny.
Yeah.
No, that was the third one.
That was the third?
That was the third one. The fourth one was where they made up a guy.
They made up
a bad guy that was made
weird.
His, what was it? He was made from the sun.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that's, he also got his power from the sun or whatever. And if he got, but if he got in the shade,
Man, I did not see these movies.
Oh, I did.
This is my point, is that I would agree that it seems like financially, in the way movies have worked, that we have proved that a trilogy is very well, is accepted for movie-going audiences. You see, Star Wars was a big hit, and a lot of movies seem to do well when they arc in a three-story, which makes sense. It's a beginning, middle, and end. It's what's in the film, so it makes sense to do it within three chapters as well. Almost every movie is built in a three-chapter or a three-act arc. But I maintain that it's the executive movie producer saying, you make this one sell, we'll talk about a two-picture deal.
See, and to me, that's a mistake. I think that if you think long-term, which I think they notoriously don't do, like, okay, Sam, we're making the first Batman movie, and say, okay, here's what I want to do, okay? We all think that Joker is the guy that Batman has to go up against, right? So you give me a three-picture deal. We're going to do the first movie is going to be Two-Face or Mr. Freeze or something like that. Second movie is going to be the Penguin. And then the third movie is going to be the Joker. Now, if you give me this three-picture deal, we can hint at the Joker.
The
he can kind of pop in. But it's like Star Wars, you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh my gosh, in the next one, we're going to see like what's going to happen. It's already, you know what I mean? It's already been predetermined. We know. So if you could put it together as a group, so you don't always start these superhero movies with like, hey, here's them fighting their main guy.
Which is what they did in the new Batman. Batman Begins, it was like, it's the Scarecrow, and then they teased the Joker, and then that movie blew up, and we'll see if, what's-her-face is playing Catwoman? What's her face? Anne Hathaway is Catwoman in the next movie.
Oh,
do you not know this?
No.
I can't wait to see the casting videos to see who went, because these guys are not idiots. I mean, these movies are almost sacred now after the second film being so big. To somebody to go, you know what? It needs to be Catwoman, and it needs to be Anne Hathaway. Like, how did they come down to that decision? Natalie Portman would be a better Catwoman than Anne Hathaway. But I thought,
well, she's too old now. I was going to say, I thought Michelle Pfeiffer did a really good
job. She did a wonderful job. You can't. She's Eminem's mom. She can't be Catwoman. She was Eminem's mom 5 years ago. She cannot be Catwoman now.
Oh, that's funny to me. I don't know what else to say about this. I've always thought that. I've always thought, well, if you're going to make three, because everybody always complains about how sequels go bad. Like, we'll stop making the biggest one first.
Well, and I also think for the 1989 Batman, unless I'm mistaken, you might know better than me, that Joker is integral to Batman's origin story.
Yes.
He is the criminal
that shoots his parents.
Exactly. And they shifted that around.
And then later on, something happens and he becomes the Joker.
And he becomes the Joker. I thought that was... So, it's difficult...
Right, but I feel
to do
like,
an origin story without, like, the two sides of the coin.
I feel like, though, that same movie could be made in the third one, where they do the origin, and then when Joker shows up, they're like, holy snaps, Joker was the guy who killed his parents.
Well, that's like what Darth Vader was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Joker? No, well,
he
eventually,
did not laugh.
If you watch the newest three films first, it'd be like, oh, and crap, he became Darth Vader.
Yeah.
If you know it's coming, it's like, ah, oh, which I have a huge... I've been watching the Clone Wars
cartoon
show, and it is so ridiculously beautiful. The money that they drop into the show is well spent, incredible. They have okay writers. Like, they try to force a moral and always get distracted halfway through, and they forget, like, oh, it's supposed to be about trust. Faith is pretty much the same thing. That'll work.
We just defeated all these guys. Trust fault.
Yeah,
all right, we learned our lesson.
There it is. It's graphic on the level of a comic book. There is one I watched recently from season two where the Genosians, they're like the insect guys from the second movie, were fighting the clone troopers. And they get they get caught on fire because they have flame troopers. So they've got on the corner of the screen of the stormtroopers finally, or the clone troopers finally winning the battle. Off in the lower right hand corner of the screen is the flailing arms of an on fire Genosian bug creature going, ah, he's on fire, and a clone trooper is over him shooting him down. Thoop, thoop, thoop. And I was like, damn, that is pretty hardcore. That's some Vietnam stuff happening on the screen right now. So it's not meant for kids.
I love the smell of lightsaber in the morning.
But what I don't get is how they can spend so much energy in an era in the franchise's history where you know the end, that both sides are fighting for no good reason. Your hero is the villain, and they tease it all the time. He'll do something terrible, and they'll play the Darth Vader song. Like, this is not a redemptive story, at least with the first trilogy. The rebels are fighting the good fight. They're fighting for freedom, for their liberty.
By making the choice of telling it in the order they told it, there is no, like, oh, no.
Well, and I think it all stems back to the issues with the Clone Wars and what the Clone Wars ended up being. That it's not the Clone Wars, it's the Clone Army Wars against the droid. That'd be the Clone Droid Wars. The Clone Wars...
Am I wrong that is it that the Clone Wars was kind of a throwaway, like, what do we call this? Oh, we'll call it the Clone Wars.
Pretty much. I'm
and
sure
not,
he had
not explain
an,
any of it.
Yeah, I'm sure he had an idea, and I would love... I can't wait to go to heaven and actually read the script that was written, the supposed three-episode arc.
I don't know. There's a lot of nerds that feel like that script belongs in hell.
That might be true.
That is a sin against man.
It is obvious. He knew. He knew that he had the first three episodes, and he knew that there was something that went on. I am willing to bet dimes to donuts it was not this concept that the Empire or the Emperor, weaseled his way to create this war, and that's what the Clone Wars were. It was too simple. It feels like he knew the ending to his story, so he wrote this idea.
He reverse engineered it.
Because the Clone Wars, the idea is still fascinating of, like, who do you trust? Who's who? You have an army of clones. I steal one of your clones and clone my own army, so now we're evenly matched. And instead of nuclear arms or whatever armory that you need, it's about, do you have a cloning facility? Who's your army? How do you mass produce them fast enough? You know, I take your senator and I make my entire clone look just like you.
What does Jar 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 Binks doing?
That's very important.
Right.
And instead, I don't think he consulted anybody. I think he just took a monkey, put it in front of a typewriter, and produced Hamlet. And they said, you can't do that. And then he had a three-year-old.
All right. Well, I guess I'll bang out a script in the weekend.
Okay,
then.
Here it comes.
Hey, guys, I did more than a script. I got all three movies done in a weekend.
It's all good. You know, and I think first...
I'm going to go get my flannel washed and pressed because I am formal.
I think for as long as there is Star Wars, there will be people that will be able to complain about it. Because if you hear people that have got about 10 years on us, they can go off about how Return of the Jedi is just the greatest letdown in all of humanity.
Really?
Little did they know that that these other movies were coming.
George knew.
Some people will say...
oh, really?
Yeah, here
I'll
it comes.
Show you.
You wait till you see Phantom Menace. Some people will put them in the order of Empire Strikes Back, New Hope, Revenge of the Sith, in order of like good films. So I would actually agree. I think Revenge of the Sith is probably a better film.
I can have a conversation obviously with people that hate all the movies. I think it's just because I grew up with I love them.
Oh, I love
them. I don't love them with the same love, but like when I my dad took me to see Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi because I was too young to see Star Wars.
Of course, but you weren't born when Star Wars was out.
Too young,
not existing.
When I watched Star Wars, even though I was only like two or three when Empire Strikes Back came out, my dad took me to see that in the theater, and I'd already seen Star Wars, and I just grew up playing them all day on the VHS, When I went into that theater when The Phantom Menace was the first one, right?
Yeah.
So when
in 1999,
I remember watching it and I with my dad in a movie theater. Like I got a special screening thing and I took my dad to go see it.
Yeah.
And when
meanwhile I'm with David Maddox and Chris Goodrum out in San
Jose.
Marin,
yeah.
No, Marin
I was in
County.
Stockton. my dad when Liam Neeson plunges when you just see from the backside of that door the lightsabers cutting through the door slowly.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I was so happy.
Yeah,
I just remember
in
that moment, I wanted to grab my dad like I was 3 years old again and go,
it was great.
And I was 20 something.
I saw it 5 times in the theater. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. And then when I went back and they did the rest of the films, you're like, if you watch that in context of the first three, this movie has nothing to do with the rest of them. Phantom Menace looks like an ABC Family film that they got the rights to, and they're like, and here is something Star Wars-y, and there are pod racing.
We need to kill 2 hours where we introduce a guy named Obi-Wan Kenobi to a guy named Anakin
and
Skywalker.
He'll defend that. He'll say that he when they said... here's what you need to do. He said, I want to do the first film as just the child. And they said that you need to do that as a backstory and for like 10 minutes. He said, no, I want to do it this way. He says, he'll claim, I think I have enough popularity to get away with it and the movies will still survive. But this is the vision that I have. Like, if that is true, if that's not him backed in the corner, I can respect that.
You know what he really needs to defend? The fact that he doesn't wear a belt and tucks in his shirt.
Yeah.
That's what he really needs to defend,
What's
George?
What's up with that?
Yeah, come on now. I mean, it's cool. We get
Don't
the casual,
revile him.
We get the casual flannel look, but throw a belt on, dude. Nobody needs to see your button struggle. All right,
oh, man.
Because you're six blockbuster.
I think he only does that for
movies.
I think he only does that for the movies. It's six. He has a lot. I mean, don't forget he's got Indiana Jones. He is George
Wait,
Lucas
he was attached to those.
Attached to those? Are you being funny? You had me. Damn it.
Let's not forget about that THX masterpiece.
What?
1109 or
62?
Whatever it was.
Where were you in 62?
No, that's a real movie. The THX was his film project.
Who are you talking to?
I thought I was talking to Kevin Miller. Who am I talking to?
Who aren't you talking to? Do you ever see...
George Lucas?
That is true. Do you ever see George Lucas in Love?
No, you know what I want to get... I've never saw that, but
George Lucas in Love is a parody of Shakespeare in Love and Star Wars, in which it shows how George Lucas was inspired to create Star Wars. I'm sure it's on YouTube. George Lucas in Love,
right here. Look on the thing. This is a new movie that's coming out very soon. I think you could get it on Blockbuster on Demand or Amazon on Demand. The People versus George Lucas.
Who are the people?
I think if I remember reading the thing, let's
that's
see
cool
if
it,
the official trailer. For it here. Is this going to be worth seeing? Does George mean anything to you?
I owe George a lot. Not in a legal sense.
George appeals to the child in everybody.
That guy unlocked a generation's imagination.
I don't really get that, man.
I imagine George in a crystal castle drinking margaritas, lying on a bed made of people. A lot of people view George Lucas as the Antichrist.
Yeah.
George Lucas raped our childhood. George Lucas raped our childhood. George Lucas raped our childhood.
George Lucas, who Shaitan Sagir.
He's a little devil disguised as a false prophet.
He's like the evil genius of marketing.
Return of the Jedi was the beginning of merchandising, and then the whole thing became super commercial from then onwards.
He's just throwing stuff out and we're going, more. Come on, George. More. I'm a bit disappointed.
I think that's by my house.
I mean, how can you not feel bad to have people who love you and worship you as a god like turn against you as if you're some sort of fallen angel?
You know, has he fulfilled his destiny or has he destroyed his legacy?
I think when you get specialists who are absolute devotees, you're wide open to criticism.
The hatred that people claim they have for the new films proves how profoundly they love them.
George has said many times to me and to many other people that Star Wars was a bit of a curse.
He had a pile of scripts that he would show me, would never let me read them. And he would say, these are the movies I'm going to make. None of those movies have been made.
There's a lot of pressure on George Lucas to make these because they're business ventures.
Star Wars is my story. Wow. Just like my house is, you know, my house. So if I want to paint my house green, even if everyone else thinks it should be red, guess what? I'm going to paint it Jar Jar.
People hate Jar Jar Binks. They hate him now. People are going to be looking at these films in 50 years, in 100 years. They're going to hate him too.
When we're in retirement homes arguing about things, we'll be having a conversation about what went wrong with The Phantom Menace.
If he wants to fix something, go back and redo Howard the Duck.
I saw no kidding. Just not giving him a big hug. It's like, I'm kidding.
I hate even saying things like I just said because it sounds like I'm being mean to Lucas, and I love him.
Cut the man some slack. His people, man. That's George. That's George.
I don't think he's raped anyone's childhood, frankly. That's a little overdramatic, isn't it?
Really? Thanks, obvious person.
Ooh, that was good. You all right?
Yeah, I spit on myself.
Oh, I can't wait to watch that.
Mr. Lucas, sir, we the fans, the true fans of your franchise, salute you.
Coming soon to a theater not too far away, far, far away from you.
Like next door.
Yeah, I don't think it's had to be a limited release because it's supposed to, it says slated for release in 2010. The People vs. George Lucas delves into the impassioned feelings and opinions expressed by fans and foes of legendary screen icon George Lucas and the many debates surrounding his legacy. Don't forget that you could still send us your own films and interviews until September 30, 2009. Too late.
I was going to say that's a while ago. That is fascinating.
And a whole documentary, which like, is I'm probably going to watch that this weekend on a plane when I have to fly. So I'm gonna rent it on the Tunes of I.
You know what's so fascinating as well, and you'll have to tell me if it touches on it, or maybe I'll watch it myself. But it was also the D-Day for Eastern philosophies within American culture. Star Wars was the beginning of the idea of integrated spiritualism that, mm-hmm. like Middle Eastern and Hindu and Buddhism. Prior to Star Wars, those were foreign concepts and not accepted within American culture. And you see since then, since Star Wars became so popular, now a lot of most movies and stories incorporate this sense of everything being connected, which is not a Christian idea at all. And prior to those films, all of our Americana was grown out of a Christian belief. So since Star Wars, all this concept of what was the movie that just came out with by what's his bucket, the terrible one, Avatar. Same thing of like the world tree and all this. And it's fascinating because we still as a culture can't let go of the Christian philosophies completely because there's always like a sense of hope, which is a Christian philosophy, not an Eastern philosophy, or of redemption, also not a philosophy from the East. And it's like this weird kind of middle ground that Americans are stuck in between of our roots as a culture and also this very enticing thing. So I wonder if the Star Wars documentary will touch on that at all, because folks that are old enough will tell you they could see the shift in culture go from when one professor talked about it being vacation Bible school camp for Eastern philosophies, that they would go to like a vacation Bible school. You go and see this movie for 2 hours and then go get your arts and craft, which is like an R2-D2 cup or an action figure, and then you come home and play with them and reinforce these values. And now here we are 30 years later, and it's accepted. It's expected within our culture
to be like Buddhist about things.
That everything happens for a reason, and
there's
and the natural binding energy, all that stuff about the Force. It was all brand new at the time. It was like, you look at cinema, look at films, it was not around in anything, and then that started, and now it's
so
expected.
It is unfair to call him the Antichrist then, because that's not what he did. He's the anti-Buddha.
He's the pro-Buddha.
He's a skinny Buddha.
Yeah.
Well, if you ruin Buddhism, as far as his fans are concerned.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, factually, he supported it.
No, I
but
see.
But he also, like, I bet you there's a Buddhist somewhere going, no, that's not what we meant. You know?
I think it's closer to Buddhism than it is to Christianity. Like, the idea if there's a meter between the two, it's going to tip over.
Finding
that way.
A center, finding your calm. Oh, yeah. It's not based on anything. Like, what was it? Like, the Jedis aren't allowed to be married. Or
all that kind of stuff.
Fall in love. Yeah. They don't have emotion.
Right.
The more that they could just be at peace, that's what their job is.
I think it confuses us as a culture, because we still maintain these Judeo-Christian values within it, because that's just what we were for 200 years. I also think it's accurate. But then you blend in these other philosophies, and we, in pop culture, are very confused through it.
Are you, I want to change subject a little bit. Do we have time?
Sure, yeah, you can talk about whatever you want.
This is
your podcast.
No, it's not.
You want to make the house green. Everybody is telling you to paint it red. You're going to paint it Jar Jar.
What's funny is that was an animated thing, but it sounded like George.
It was pretty spot on, and it made me laugh. I didn't see it coming. I'm going to paint it Jar Jar.
I want to hear more about what that guy said. He goes, he showed me all these scripts. These are the movies I want to make, and he has not made any of those movies.
I'd be interested.
I've heard stories, and I believe them to be true, like American Graffiti was made off of a dare by Francis Ford Coppola, where he said, sure, you make these Star Wars movies and these weird sci-fi, you know, things. I bet you couldn't just make a fluffy, you know, comedy. And so he's
what's the one, American Graffiti, I thought predated Star Wars.
I don't think it did.
Maybe I don't know the name of the movie.
Because I think that's why Harrison Ford... Harrison Ford was discovered on American Graffiti.
Yeah, exactly, which predated Star Wars.
Well, the only thing I can think of is that I know that he made that THX 1109 or something like that. That was a feature. There was a feature version of a student project that he did at USC.
Yep.
And then there was one other thing that he did or whatever. Because I saw there was a...
American Graffiti was 73.
There was a documentary that he had made. That's what it was. He had made... Because I think also that they wanted... The studio came to him and said, we want a fluffy, lighthearted movie. And he said, I'll make this movie, American Graffiti, if you greenlight this movie, Star Wars. And but again, I thought, I think it was a dare, because I guess maybe it's because he had the scripts. Maybe I know that this story is true.
You sure you're not thinking of Scientology?
Francis Ford Coppola does look like L. Ron Hubbard.
They are.
And
the
George
same
Lucas
person.
Looks like Francis Ford Coppola. No, but my point was I thought it was interesting that the idea of this documentary was that there was a collective of directors that all came from the same school and the same area of California all at the same time. And it was Francis Ford Coppola, Spielberg, Lucas. Yeah. And there's one other one that I'm forgetting, and that they were real friendly with each other, and that, you know, and I remember that being a storyline. I'm like, oh, how interesting that this humongous movie that it's about my town, and the social aspect.
Have you seen
of
it?
My oh yeah.
Do you think it's accurate?
I don't know if at that time, but I mean, they mentioned geographically, they mentioned the right cities.
Better than the Lacey Peterson made-for-TV movie?
Yes.
You didn't grow a forest overnight?
No. And I think that there's a drive-through that they use that is not like, it's supposed to be this, what used to be the A&W drive-through that was really popular for cruisers on Graffiti Weekend, which was always the weekend after high school got out. That was the idea.
Yeah.
But anyway.
You had a question.
I don't remember it now.
No, I was looking forward to it.
But no, I guess so. I think I was just saying that that whatever that's what it was, whatever happened to those movies? Like, if he could be dared to make this movie, and then he had all these other ideas, like, why isn't he making other movies?
Why should he?
Because he wants to make movies.
Meh.
He doesn't, is what you're saying?
Well, I mean, why should he? He's probably, depending on what metrics you use or whatever, but he's arguably the most successful director in the history of man. With the number of worshipers he has, he's kind of done. Like, there's no, at this point, he can make stuff, he can just do it at will. You see it all over the place whenever he does anything. It just smacks of the lack of effort. It's not about creating art. It was just, that's what I wanted to do. We're seeing his effort level, like what he's really invested in and interested in doing. We saw it real fast because there was no reason why they didn't make another Star Wars movie 3 years after Return of the Jedi.
Like, do the final trilogy.
Yeah, why not do it in 1986? Why not do it in 1989? And you could tell he had some issues with his family and stuff, and he was tired. He'd been a big six-year run of some really important and big stuff. But why not later? Why not in 91? Why did he wait 16 years?
In another documentary that I saw was that the family thing, like, he had a moment where he wanted to be more involved with his daughter.
Yeah.
And that I heard somebody else talk about him, like a nerd documentary, where they said that he's really into his kid, and that's why he's falling off the radar. And then recently that his passion had been more about, like with ILM, he was more involved in that he was interested in pushing the technology of making film
and I believe
more than he was
true.
Interested
and,
in telling
and that's
stories.
That's what I'm saying. That's what he's more interested in. He's not interested
in making movies. He just wants to do the...
Because that's what we saw is that the special effects in the industry had jumped, and they're in everything. You watch a movie, and it's like it's either a Muppet movie or an ILM film.
Yeah.
And whereas you look at J.J. Abrams, and he can't stop. He's like, I got...
I didn't give that what it deserved. It's either a Muppet movie or ILM.
That's it.
That is hilarious.
Right?
That is hilarious.
That's what the first ones were. They were Muppet movies, now they're Pixar movies.
No, what I translated it to be was that every movie is either a Muppet movie or it's, if you're doing special effects, it's Muppets or it's Industrial Light and Magic.
That's it. That was my point.
Yeah. That's great.
You broke it down.
Well done. I'm here for you, listeners. You are welcome. I killed you.
I don't remember what I was going to say.
All right.
Well, this is why we need a showrunner.
No, we're fine. Let's end our show. That was good. We did it. Mission accomplished.
I would like to see the battle of the franchises. Whenever I think about this, of like what gets to be at this level.
I want to see the big FU. Like, that's what I like. If I feel like if I was in his shoes, there would be a part of me of like, oh, you really think I'm here to destroy you? Well, all right. Guess what? Hey, whoever's in charge of Gene Roddenberry, guess what? We're going to do Star Wars versus Star Trek.
Yeah.
I'm going to finance it. I've got all the money in the world. It's going to be awesome. Let's have some fun with this. And let's just piss every nerd off in the world and see what happens.
Well, that, of course, was the talking dog. What was it Conan used to do?
Triumph the dog.
Yeah, when all the nerds were standing out in front of line for the first Star Wars. I mean, that is some classic stuff of that dog walking around. But at the end of it, at the end of him interviewing these people that are completely embarrassing, they have a guy in a legitimate Vulcan costume with the makeup and ears just walk by and give the Vulcan symbol and then flip everybody off. And just walk by and flip them all off. And they're like, and they eat it up. Boo. Like they're not the same thing.
My favorite line from that is when there was a guy dressed as Darth Vader. Yes. And he goes, which one of those buttons do you press to have your mom come pick you up?
You need to finish your fish fillet sandwich. That's when he's talking to the wizard. I've come here to make sure all you Jedis are behaving. And then he's holding a McFish fillet sandwich. Are you going to finish your McFish fillet sandwich? And only to be topped by him saying, arcane. The guy, like, they get into a verbal battle, and the guy dressed as a wizard goes, arcane fireball, and then starts to pretend, not actually touching the puppet, but begins to pretend to touch the puppet's head like he's punching it, and the puppet turns to the camera and says, quite an imagination you have. You got bested by a puppet.
Oh, damn it, that's funny.
That is some solid comedy.
All right, that's our show. Did we do it? We did.
We did everything.
I feel like, okay, good.
Was there something else on the Facebook page I needed to mention?
I know of.
It was really good. Things have been great on the Facebook page.
What is that a picture of? I want to see that.
Batman? These are like all the Batmans ever. All together. So you got anywhere from Batman 99 to Batman 63.
Wow. What's this guy on the left?
That's Batman 99. I see Batman Beyond or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, where he becomes like a mutant. I don't know what he does.
Why do they get some? Are they more barrel-chested early and then they get...
I think it's just like all the costumes, everything that's been
done. That's
Batman.
Ever been done.
It's on the Facebook page. You know where you can find this? At facebook.com/secondfunniestpodcast.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it. All right, well, that's been our show. 408-228-4911 if you want to give us... Oh, you know what we didn't do? Speaking of which, I just felt bad because maybe we had people call us and say, hey, I have a voicemail for you, Second Funniest Podcast, and then we didn't play it. Yeah, see, look, we have stuff in
this
here.
Is gonna be
so hold
great.
On 1 second. Yeah, we do. We have voicemails.
Oh, well, all right. Play
them. And I totally forgot.
Play them all.
Got let's 2 minutes. This one.
Na, 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 na. You finish the rest.
Na 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 na
Kit Kat bar.
Na 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 na.
Finish it. Finish the rest.
Get out of here.
Donut.
Batman.
Hi, Justin and Kevin. This is Christian, first time caller, long time listener. Hey, I have a question for Justin. Hey, Justin, do you think you could accept my friend Wes that's pending on the PlayStation Network? Justin Comedy, I believe, is your name. So if you could, please accept that. It's been pending for quite some time now. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Did you put him up to this?
No.
When I get on there, I accept. I have like 4 or 5 that I've been doing every single time. Well, that was worth it to bring the show
you
to
should,
a screeching
halt. I don't think it's a screeching halt. Maybe he doesn't have your name spelled right.
Yeah,
does
I don't
spell
know
comedy
I...
with a I-E instead of a Y?
It spells it with 2 Z's.
How many X's do you got in your name, bro?
All right, that was our show now, for sure, for sure. Wait.
Yeah. What else?
Nope, that was our show.
Harry Potter versus Star Wars.
Oh. Versus Star Trek. That's a StarCraft I would play.
Hey, man, there's no dog there. Oh.
408-228-4911. Send us an email, show@secondfunniestpodcast.com. Don't forget, I think we should have a banner up there for Amazon.com. If not, definitely click through to GameStop.com so that we can get a little taste of your video gaming dollar. Tell your friends about the Facebook page. You can follow us at Second Funniest. All that stuff. Check out this cool picture
your
of all the
Batman. Plugs are incredible.
Are they not good?
You just, no, they're amazing. I said they're incredible.
I'm picking up on sarcasm.
No, I'm not putting anything down.
On behalf of my former good friend, Kevin Miller, this is
still your best friend.
I'm saying, okay, bye.